This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena. Grant Cardone and I tried unsuccessfully to schedule this podcast for a long time. On the fourth try, we finally connected. Grant is an entrepreneur, an author, and a speaker, but in my view, he is most of all a hustler. And I mean that in the positive sense of the word, that he's out really working hard, getting things done. I asked him to step into the arena because so many people I know in the B2B community could use a lot of what Grant teaches. I think they misunderstand some of the principles, and we get to that eventually. While we did this, Grant recorded video and he was in his studio with his lovely wife, Elena. That's the voice you hear in the first part of this recording. It's a wild ride and you are going to be entertained the whole way through. Let's get into it with my friend Grant Cardone.
I had to put a tie on because I can't let you look so good all the time.
Well, I don't have a tie on, man. I thought the deal was no tie today. It's Good Friday, bro.
You're always looking good.
Well, thank you.
True dad,
hey,
true dad.
Let's get straight into this and get real, because I know you're always willing to play this way.
But I just want to, she's my sidekick, okay, in case I need any advice, any extra advice, okay?
You may have to call for co-counsel at some point. You know, that's all right. You just say, I need to talk to my lawyer before I answer that question, and put your hand over the mic. It's all cool.
You know, the other sales guru with the second most beautiful wife is Brian Tracy's wife. I love that woman.
Oh, I haven't seen her, but I would never bet against Brian Tracy.
No, she's amazing.
He's the real deal. Okay, let's get real here. I'm a B2B guy, and a lot of people in my community,
Do you know what B2B is?
He wants to get real.
No, we are getting real, but I want to know if my wife, knows what B2B is.
No, I just know A to B.
You think it's breast to breast?
I wasn't thinking that, actually.
Okay.
Now I'm thinking that.
Yeah.
Thanks,
you know, this is what happens in an interview cycle with a customer that's able and capable. You know, they start throwing all these things at you, and you next thing you know, man, this thing's so random. I don't know what I'm dealing with here. And you know, the sales professional needs to understand how to stay focused, locked in on their target, and not get distracted. Go ahead, big boy.
And be prepared, man. You show up with some questions.
There you go.
Do the work ahead of time. That's how you do it.
I love it.
In the B2B world, people look at you, and I'm setting us up to have a conversation here about this, but they look at you and you're confident and you're direct and you say it how it is. And it's so intimidating to people in B2B, and they look at you and they go, I don't like him. I think he's arrogant, or I think he's self-oriented. And I say, there may be people in the room with you that think that's from time to time too. But listen, here's the thing though.
Has anybody actually told you that, or are those your thoughts?
No, people have told me that because to what you're doing because it's important.
You say, and people told you, oh, the guy's arrogant, he's not my type, and he's self-oriented.
Yeah.
I've never heard this.
That's what I said
word.
About you for the first year before, when I didn't return any of your phone calls.
Uh-huh.
Those were pretty much the exact same.
I'm thoughts. Self-oriented? I've never even heard that term before.
Okay.
Yeah. So well, look at you. Here's the deal, though. People are struggling because they don't have the confidence, because they don't believe like you believe, because they won't go out and ask for what they need. And what I want to do is I want to talk about what you do and why it's important so we can share with people, because I believe the B2B community needs what you teach. And I'll give you the short version of this story. 1988, Neil Rackham wrote a book called Spin Selling.
Yeah.
It said closing behaviors work against big deals. So now no one thinks that they should ever ask anybody for anything. And we look at their pipeline, and their pipeline stalled because they go from appointment to appointment with no commitments.
I wonder what the biggest deal Neil ever did. Do you know?
Selling Huthwaite.
How big a deal would that be?
40, 50 million, maybe.
Yeah, I've been on deals double that size. I'm telling you, if you don't ask for the business, if you don't say, when are we going to do it, let's close it, that doesn't work against you. Everybody wants to get a deal done. Nobody wants to ask for it, when are we going to get it done? Everybody's timid and walking on eggshells like, oh my God, I can't ask. And then you look up and you see hundreds of millions, not a few, but hundreds of millions of people trying to figure out, how do I get the wage I deserve? How do I get the girl I deserve? How do I get, you know, how do I just get a good deal when I buy a house? How do I get a loan on a house once I buy it? Look, you don't get what you deserve, and you don't get what's fair in life. You get what you ask for, what you can make sense of, what you persist for, you know, continue to ask for. She wouldn't go out with me. So the fact that, you know, somebody might say I'm arrogant, you don't even know me. I mean, you don't even know what I'm going through. You know, you don't even know the pain I experience in my life or what goes on inside of me if you think I'm arrogant. That's just your judgment and criticism.
Right.
You know, it's like driving down the street at night and some guy's got his high beams on and you get all pissed off at him. Like, what is he doing? Dude, you're the one looking at him. Okay. You're the one looking at him. If she doesn't get it.
I got it.
But she'll be like, I just don't understand the high beams thing. I'm like, well, because you know, if somebody thinks I'm arrogant, I need to remember, oh, they're paying attention to me.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that I am arrogant, because I'm actually not arrogant. The second part of that is that self-importance, kind of self, what was the word?
Self-oriented.
I am extremely self-oriented. Okay. I am interested in my survival. I'm interested in success for me. I'm interested in getting the things I want. I don't know when somebody decided that that's a bad thing. I want that for my kids. I want them to be interested in their survival. I want them to be interested in their own self-esteem. I want them to be highly interested in their grades, their success, their future. I want my wife, when she goes out into the marketplace, out into the world is a marketplace. She was in New Orleans recently. I want her interested in how good a time she has. And the fact that I admit that to the public and everybody else is kind of like, I can't tell anybody.
You know? But they've been told not to.
Yeah,
they've
been told there's a whole
bad.
Humble.
You're not allowed to want.
Yeah.
And the humble thing.
Yeah. Be humble.
Is big.
Be humble. I'm a humble person.
Yeah. I had to laugh at that.
I know.
Let me go back. Let's go back and talk. I know about your story, but I don't know that a lot of people listening to this probably won't know your story. My dad left when I was 7, and you lost your dad probably a short time after that, right?
Yeah. I lost my dad at 10.
Oh. Okay. And then I had not having a father around. I fronted a rock band from 17 to 25. I didn't have any vision of who I was or what I could be. 25, I had a brain surgery. That changed for me. And I finally understood that there was something more that I was capable of and that I was supposed to be doing. What happened to you at 25 that made you make that change?
Well, it was what happened to me between like 10 and 25. It was just, you know, so many disappointments in my life and so many with everything across the board, okay? So, like, everything from my family to the girl I wanted to finally getting the girl I wanted and it not being her, and then, it, you know, to the profession, I was in the wrong profession, to I couldn't get, you know, man, everything. I mean, everything, and just a disappointment with myself, you know, just a constant dissatisfaction with me. And so I think most people can really relate to that sense of, hey, have you fulfilled your potential? Do you know you have more? Is there this waning? Or was there a time where you had that thing going on and maybe you just gave up on it and you don't even remember it anymore? Doesn't take much.
Yeah. What was the event, though, where you went, I'm changing? What happened you said, I got to change?
Well, I said that. I said I got to change about maybe 700-800 times. You know, every morning I wake up, I got to change. I can't keep doing this. This is killing me, man. I got to change. And then I wouldn't. So I don't think people have that idea that one time I said it to myself 800 or 900 times. And then finally one day I'm like, okay, this is it though. I'm really going to do it now. And I started making some changes. The problem with that idea to change is you have to have some place to go.
Right.
You know, when you're driving down a road, I'm going to change lanes. You need a lane to go to. And when you get in that lane, you have to, you know, you need to go in that lane completely and forget that there's any other choices. It could be the ditch. It could be hit another car. But whatever choice you're going to make at that moment, you know, for me, I didn't have any other place to go. Okay. I was coming out of a treatment facility for drug addiction. And the treatment facility in 30 days screwed me up more than probably 10 years of drugs did. I literally, in 30 days, they gave me so much bad information.
Wow.
I wouldn't know that for probably 15 years. But when I came out of that treatment facility, the one thing they did tell me that was good was, look, man, you got to give up the other thing, and you need to go all in on this new thing. And I didn't quite take that advice, but I did take give up that other thing, and then I threw myself completely into my work. And that was really the big changer for me, that I redirected all this energy.
It's interesting, and that's part of the we won't talk about you being arrogant for the whole call, but that's part of it, is that you have this vision, and you finally got a vision of what you could be instead of the vision of what you were. And until you get that vision and it snaps, you don't have a goal. You don't know where you're going.
Yeah,
or what
but you know what? I was arrogant when I was I was 15 and 16. I've always been walking around big mouth. I want to, strutting my chest out, acting like I'm a big dog. And because I've always wanted to be a big guy. I always wanted to be a big guy. I always wanted to be successful. I think everybody wants that, you know. Talk to a little 2 or 3 or 4 year old, you know, and ask them about, hey, man, could you be Superman? All of a sudden, most of them are like tripping off into being Batman, yeah. Superman, Princess Cinderella. So I think somewhere along the line, we get socialized to the point to where we're not willing to be the banty rooster anymore, and not willing to have the voice and say, hey, look, I don't want to be in the middle class, okay? I'm the guy that irritates people because I tell people, I do not want to be in the middle class. I've been saying it since I was 16 years old. I'm 56 years old. 40 years later, I'm more right today about not wanting to do that than I was when I was 16. Because, you know, 40 years ago, the middle class was a lot better off than it is today. I don't want to be in the middle class. I don't want any of my friends to be in the middle class. I don't want my employees to be in the middle class. It's hard to get out, but you need to get out, okay, because it's not a safe place to be.
Hey, but it's harder to stay.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not a good place to stay.
Dude, absolutely. It's a hard place to stay. It's very dangerous.
Yeah, I think so, too. I teach a college class at a university, and these kids think I'm going to get a safe job.
Right.
I'm going to try to, and I tell them that you're making a big mistake. The only safe job is the one you create for you. That's it. Otherwise, you're in trouble.
That's right.
You're so transparent. I love that about you. Let me talk to you about fear, because I recognize that you're driven by fear. And it's the fear, I think, I got the same fear I think that you do, and I'm 46. I'm 10 years younger than you, way younger than you, by the way.
Way younger.
A lot of time. I'm
Me
on your
too.
Heels.
I'm way, you're way.
You're younger than both
Whoa,
of us, right?
Way, yes.
I mean, if you subtract
and the older
his...
you get, the bigger of the age gap we become.
You're right.
Okay.
He's losing ground. But it's this fear of running out of time, isn't it? When did you get struck with that fear of running out of time?
Well, I mean, I had that fear of running out of time more when I was 10 and 15 and 20 years old than I do today. Like when I was 20 years old, I was confident that there was no way I would live till I was 25. It was just going to be impossible. And
I thought it was 30 for me, but yeah, I got it.
Yeah. Now today, I mean, I think the thing that triggers the time thing for me today is watching kids. You know, I watch a 4-year-old become a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old become a 4-year-old, you know, and I'm like, damn, man, it's happening, dude. This is going to happen. It's happening fast. You know, now the thing about time is really about, I want to take the time I have now to leave some quality products and some legacy, like this video right here. Okay. See this video right here, what we're doing right now could be considered, oh, it's loose, it's easy. You know, the guy's just doing this. He's got his wife here. But you know what? These are the kind of things that are transparent enough and are authentic enough that they actually grab somebody's attention, and that I can have my wife here and talk to her about whatever we're talking about today, you know, which is my life in this case. But, you know, are we scared? I mean, we're involved in some huge deals right now. I'm scared every day, dude. Every day. I think fear is a good thing, not a bad thing. So I'm driven to do something, and sometimes that's something you're running away from, and sometimes it's something you're running to. In my case, I think I'm always running away from something and running to something all at the same time. I don't even know the difference.
But you're
anymore.
Always running.
I'm running,
always
man.
Running.
Right?
That's a fact.
I'm running a
always
little.
Always running.
Huh?
Fact. Always running.
Through
and
the
always, yes.
How about
and
through
motivating
the airports?
Others, too.
Yeah. How about through the airports, though?
Oh, yeah.
See, I want to get to wherever I'm going fast so that when I get there, I have a little extra time to do more. Even if it's just stop for a second, which doesn't happen much, but.
I can see that from looking at your Facebook feed, man. Always moving.
That's me on my Facebook feed. That's me on my Twitter feed. And that's me on my YouTube channel. So that's not a bunch of robots or people doing that.
I can attest to that.
Right? Yeah, I can too. There's no question about it.
I think you got this. I'm going to take off. You got this.
Peacing out.
We're going to miss you, though. You're a lot better to look at, really, if I have to be honest.
Thank you.
She's great. I mean, she's one of the reasons I keep hustling, though.
Yeah.
You know, because when I finally got my wife, and I think this is a place where it, you know, particularly family is a huge, huge thing for me. I was in Washington, D.C. doing a closing seminar yesterday, and a guy came up to me. He's like, man, congratulations on your family. And I said, wow, man, thanks a lot for saying that. Why do you say that? He's like, well, I've been watching you for 25 years, and I remember you talking about wanting kids and wanting the wife, and now you appear to have the things that you wanted. So for me, it's not just about fame or money or whatever the deal is. It's about, man, you want to get the whole package. Anybody can have the whole package. Anybody can have it, but you got to hustle to get it.
Well, that's what let's move into that. Let's talk about mindset and attitude and hustling. And I think most people can do what you and I do. And if we just even want to take that down to salespeople, most people could sell. It's that they won't. It's that they're not willing. And it's that they really want to be comfortable. They want to avoid fear and they want to avoid pain. And they want to find a place where it's just comfort. So they don't get out of bed in the morning and they hit the snooze button three times because it's warm and it's comfy in there and you can pull the covers up and you're all set. But there ain't no hustling going on and you're not asking for anybody and you're good and safe, but then you ain't getting anywhere. Talk about the attitude and the mindset that you need to succeed now and why you have to avoid just trying to be comfortable.
Well, because, you know, I think the person could just maybe recondition and get really honest with yourself that you're not actually comfortable in bed sleeping in, you know, that it is actually still very scary. And the more you don't confront the boogie monster or the boogeyman or whatever they call him, the more you don't confront him, the bigger he gets. I mean, the fact that you don't get out of bed and you don't go look underneath the bed or into the closet, the fear of this this boogeyman that doesn't even exist becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, I know most people wouldn't know this. I've never done this in an interview before, but, dude, there's been times where I couldn't get out of bed. Like, I'm not talking about for a day. I'm talking about for weeks at a time. And whether it was weeks or months or years, I didn't want to get up. I didn't want to go confront the boogie monster. I was living in Houston, Texas when I started my first business and would not call on clients' businesses in Houston because I was so scared of them. So that didn't make me more comfortable. It made me more scared. Staying in bed, covering up, doing what's comfortable makes you more scared, not more comfortable. Okay. There's just no, the way to get comfort is to give up the comfort concept and go for the freedom concept. And this is, again, back to the middle class. The middle class is built on the concept of comfort. It is built on be comfortable, be safe, protect yourself, fly under the radar, get just enough, right, make just enough. Look, man, the people that are making it on this planet are going for freedom, not comfort.
That's
that should be the new game. The new game should be, look, I'm looking for freedom,
right?
With my time, my money, my choices, my family, I want freedom. If it doesn't give me freedom, and that doesn't mean I always like doing it, you know? It's like I do probably 80% of what I do every day. I don't really want to do it. But
except
I'm
this interview. I mean, you wanted to do.
Dude, I wanted to do. I've been looking forward. You know, how many times have we tried doing this, by the way?
Like four times, I think.
I know. And I have looked forward to doing this, by the way, because I think this is part of what frees me up.
Me too. And I think it helps a lot of people, which is why I think your message is important. This message is people are making mistakes because they believe it's 1962 or something, and it ain't anymore. It's not your dad's economy anymore.
Yeah, your parents were wrong when they told you that. They were wrong not just for you. They were wrong for them.
Let's talk more about some things that you've done.
Can I just interrupt one thing? If you, because you brought up 1962, okay? If you made $27,000 in 19, I think I looked it up this morning. It was 1958, actually. That was when I was born. I am self-centered, okay? I looked up my year, okay? So
it's the starting point.
27 grand, 27 grand in 1958, close enough to 1962. Is like $278,000 today. So when your grand, when your father told you, you know, just get a good job. Okay, well, good. Now multiply times 418%. So get a good job today in your daddy's terms would mean get a job that pays you $257,000 a year.
Yeah. And that they're not going for that. They're going for security.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a job and it's safe.
Yeah.
I've watched a number of your videos, and one of them, I forget.
Did you have trouble finding the videos? Where did you find?
I had trouble finding them, yeah. If it wasn't for Google, okay. I would have had a tough time. But you take 100% responsibility for your failures. I mean, 100%. And I watched one where you were saying, you know, do whatever it takes. And you talked about Turnaround King, which you did for National Geographic or something. And you were like, I didn't close the deal. I didn't close it. That was me. And I had my chance and I didn't close it. Yeah. I didn't close this other deal.
Yeah, I didn't close the deal with CNBC.
Because
yeah.
I didn't close it. I didn't close two deals. And so many people just generally want to avoid taking responsibility for that. And by doing it, they disempower themselves by saying, well, it wasn't me, you know, it was something else. Yeah. They didn't understand what I was doing or whatever we would say to ourselves to make it okay. But you're like, no, it wasn't them. I didn't do what I needed to do, and now I'm going to move forward. Talk about excuses. And if you want to point this towards people generally, we can talk about salespeople too. Oh, I didn't close the deal because the other guy was cheaper. I didn't close the deal because my sales manager didn't help me or whatever the case is. You don't do that. You say, I didn't do it, and I need to change.
Yeah. Talk about. I mean, the deal you're referencing is a deal with CNBC. I went to CNBC, pitched this deal. They actually, they bought the show. They bought the idea. They bought the concept. They just didn't buy it from me. Okay. They ended up doing a show called The Prophet.
Right.
And what's his name? What's the cat's name?
I forget his name.
I only
watch 1 hour of TV a week. So yeah. I don't get to see
whatever his name is. Anyway. I always do that to my competition. I forget their name. And it's a sales trick. And anyway, a year later, they did the show called The Prophet. Okay. And well, that was my idea. Go in. But the difference he did was he offered CNBC to actually invest money. He had a better idea and a better angle and was more committed to the idea because he put his money where his mouth is. Okay. Now, there's no question to me that he is not good TV. He would definitely not be as good as me. I would definitely be much more entertained. Marcus Lemoine or whatever. Okay. Lemonis. But dude, you know what? The guy closed the deal. I didn't close the deal. And that's not CNBC's problem. And it's not Marcus's problem. Good for him. I didn't close the deal. And so when I say, look, take full responsibility, first of all, I don't tell anybody to do anything that I don't do myself. I for sure. If you ever get, you know, me and you ever spend any time together, we'll spend a day or two days together, and you'll be like, dude, you're the same guy all the time. I mean,
yeah,
I don't turn into another guy. I know a lot of guys, and you do too, that talk on stage.
Yeah.
And they say one thing for 1 hour, and dude, the other 23 hours, I mean, I'm like, what just happened to this cat, man?
You don't recognize him.
I'm like, wait a minute, bro. That's not what you said in the book. Now, that doesn't mean I do and say everything that I have written or say on stage. Because things change for me. You know, I'm not doing some of the things I was doing 25 years ago because things do change. So I know that if I don't take responsibility, I'm giving it to somebody else. And that's a problem because there is no chance of freedom if something happened to me. So even if something did happen to me, you know, I'm like, oh, no, I did that. Okay, like I don't want to be a victim. If you rear end me, okay, I mean if you hit me with a car from behind, okay, I know some of you guys.
I like you. I just want to be friends.
Yeah, I know you do. Friendly takes on new terms now, you know. So I'm in Miami, bro, and so you know what? I'm taking responsibility. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. I happened to be in front of you. I should have made it through the light. I shouldn't have stopped here. You rearing me. Dude, I need to move on with my life. Because me spending any time giving you power or blaming you or it just doesn't, you know, your excuses are good. They've just never changed my life.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. Excuses and the victim mentality just disempower you. If it happened to you, that means you can't change anything. You can't do anything. You just have to take whatever the world hands you. And that's not a good pattern for success.
Yeah, no, it just doesn't work. And if you study successful people, they're just highly responsible people until they're not anymore, which is when they start having problems in their life.
Yeah.
Oh, my kid's a drug addict. Okay, well, what do you have to do with it, dude? You got something to do with it, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, I was playing a little game with my kids this morning, and they liked stepmother from Cinderella, and they like being scared. The young one loves to be scared. So I'm like, I'm stepmama, da da da, and I said, look, baby, when stepmama shows up, you just say, stop. I'm not scared of you. I'm not scared of anything. Okay. And so I basically teach her how to stop somebody from harming her, you know, in that thing. And like, she's responsible. There are no victims. Bad things happen to good people every day.
But what is that little one's name?
Her name's Scarlett.
Scarlett. She's a piece of work. I can tell. Yeah. She's cut off. She's the same pattern to you. She's a tough little girl. I like her.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
A couple more questions for you.
Yes, sir.
I'm calling this right now what we're dealing with buyers when we go out into the marketplace. I'm calling it post-recessionary stress disorder.
Mm.
After this downturn, they're racked with fear all the time. And I think what they need when they need something from a salesperson, they need somebody to help them justify their concerns and be certain that they're actually going to get what they want and that things are going to work out for them. They're not going to be embarrassed. They're going to look good, whatever the case may be. They need help justifying that. And I've watched you do this a couple times. The video with Jared, where you took the call from Jared.
Yeah.
That's who you took that call from, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what I've shown to people who are like, I could never do that.
Yeah.
I could never take that call. And I'm like, but look what he's
doing. Well, I only did it twice. I only did it twice back to back. It was 80 grand in about 14 minutes. I mean, how painful can it be, dude? $80,000 in 14 minutes. It took me 20 years to learn how to do that. I just asked a couple simple questions in there. Hey,
talk about those questions, because that's what it is. You said, what's stopping you? What's stopping you from doing this? Because if you don't know what's stopping him, you can't talk about it. And once he said it's the money, you went, well, let's talk about the money. Boom. Not fear of talking about the money, but like, I got to help this guy think about his business better. And if I don't help him think about his business better, he's not going to do well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, you need to decide as a salesperson whether you're sold on your product. If you're sold on your product, then if you're completely sold, I think this is like 80% of the deal. You got to be sold on your product. Are you sold on your product? I picked up a phone. I walked in my office. The guy's about to hang up the phone. The salesperson had taken as far as he could go in the deal. He was exhausted. He was on an empty tank. And my guy's a good guy. I mean, my guy, he runs, he's the vice president of the sales department. Everybody has his day. He was with a customer too long on one call. He burned his tank out. He had basically emptied his arsenal and didn't have anything to say. So what does he say? All right, man, when's a good time to get back with you? He bought the customer's story.
Seller be sold.
Okay.
Right there on the wall.
A new mercenary came in, full of energy, fully fed, you know, with my cape on. I'm freaking packing heavy. Okay. I drop in, I got some new enthusiasm and some new energy. You know, that sales call, if you go to YouTube and search Grant Cardone and a sales call, there's a whole other level of things going on in that call for managers and owners, business owners. Look, I own three businesses. I dropped in on a call. I know 99% of all business owners will not do that. I know managers that won't do it.
I just wrote this last week. I've had three entrepreneurs in 2 days ask me the same question. I've never sold and I've never led a sales force. How do I help these people sell? And I said, get out from behind the desk and go start selling.
Dude,
pick up the phone and make appointments. You can't teach them how to do this if you can't do it.
Yeah.
It's like telling you, I'm going to teach you how to swim, even though I've never been in the water.
And I mean, maybe that's possible. Maybe you can understand the rudimentary, you know, but look, at this point, it was just an issue of having a second person on the call. Now, once that second person drops into that call, you got to be sold on your product, sold on your service, and be willing to say, hey, you called us, right? Yeah, yeah, I called you. Good. Well, you hanging up the phone doesn't get you what you wanted, dude. Okay? Why aren't you doing this right now? I mean, just right out, just blatant, why are you not doing this right now?
And that's it. What's your fear?
Yeah.
What's holding you back?
Yeah.
As soon as we know it, we can help you with it. But if we don't know it, we can't help you.
That's right.
That works. Also, it's more than just the second guy. The second guy happened to have some chops.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things that you can't duplicate in that. I had some altitude. But anybody can have altitude if you act like you have altitude. You want to act like you need to be the Banny Rooster at that moment. If you want to hold your price and you want to get what you want in life, okay, and you don't like how arrogant I am and self-absorbed and, dude, maybe you don't like what you see in me because you know you're missing it in you. I'm not talking about you, Anthony. I'm just talking about
I like what I see in you.
I know you do, man, because you want me. You know you want me. You want me. Admit it. You want me. Just say it one time. I want you.
Just a little bit. I want you.
I love it.
he closed the deal just like that. Look at him.
You know, but people, that confidence is something that can be built. It's a muscle, okay? No different. I don't know why people think, oh, you can build biceps, you can build hamstrings, you can build pecs, but you can't build confidence. You can build confidence, okay? It just requires, you know, hey, man, hold your chest up, hold your posture up. You know, start dressing different, acting different, walk around with a couple $1,000 in your pocket, make a little more money, have a few more successes, spend a little more money, you know, go out and spend some money and quit acting like you're freaking starving. I know people look at a $12 movie ticket and every time they, oh, $12 for a movie ticket. Yeah, dude, what? Kill yourself, okay? Well, you freaking, what are you doing? What are you complaining about a movie ticket bar? Buy the whole freaking place someone, okay? If you're that broke, you need to get a little t-shirt. I'm a broke dick. Okay.
Yeah.
Or what you can do is you can say, you know what, man, I get to see a 3D movie for $12. That's unbelievable. These people spent $200 million on this movie and I get to go watch it for 12 or 38 bucks.
How much was that movie ticket in 1958?
$1.25. black and white.
Yeah.
Sound had just come out. Okay.
I think you're right about the confidence, though. But once you face your fear and you do something, it goes away. And you're just more confident with every engagement. You just got to step through it the first time and then boom.
And a second time and a third time and a fourth time and
easier.
A fifth time. And it may never go away. I don't know. Mine hadn't gone away. I'm still scared, dude. I'm scared right now.
Okay, last question for
you. No.
Second...
Don't do a last question, man.
Okay, not last question.
Go ahead.
The second video, I'm using your video with the four-year-old in a presentation I give because everybody's afraid of doing what you taught a four-year-old kid to do. And it's so brilliant. It's almost irrefutable evidence that if you have the language, if you have the logic, if you know the script, you can do this. But you don't have those things. You never sat down and figured out what the script was. You never paid close enough attention. You didn't rehearse those words.
Not me. You mean the people you're talking to.
I'm talking about people who look at it and go, wow, that's not right. How does that happen?
Yeah.
He was trained, and we don't train people. And they say, I don't want to be scripted. Okay, well, then what do you want to do? Change the language every time you do something?
Well, dude, everybody's scripted.
Right.
Okay, every word you have in your vocabulary was made up by somebody. Okay, you sit around, you know, fork and knife. I just picked two words out. Where'd that come from? Okay. That's a script. I need a fork and a knife. In China, that would be, I need chopsticks. Right? So look, you're already scripted. I don't know what the big deal is, man. You mean what you're really saying is I want some of my scripts, but I don't want to learn the rest of my scripts.
Yeah.
I basically want to do the middle class playbook, be comfortable. Okay, make 30 grand a year or 40 grand a year. Hope and wish and pray that it goes far enough, knowing it won't. But I'm going to go ahead and you call it post-traumatic recession syndrome.
Yeah.
I call it freaking hallucination. Okay, denial of the reality of the situation that has been around for 40 years. Wages in America have not gone up for 40 years. They've gone down, okay? People don't want to look at the facts. We have $17 trillion of debt in the United States that's admitted to, okay? This is how you crack a guy out of his hallucination.
That's
you crack
true.
Him out of his hallucination by saying, dude, are you freaking whacked? okay? Your parents told you don't do drugs, don't jerk off, okay? Don't cuss, and they forgot to tell you don't be broke. None of our parents told us. My mom and dad didn't tell me, hey, don't be a little broke weenie, okay? Why not? Why don't Americans tell their kids, hey, don't be broke?
They Nobody tell you, had to tell me I was already broke. I started working full-time when I was 13 because I didn't like being broke.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a good place to be.
But would you have liked to get permission to say, you know what? This is a place where you could actually get rich. Go get rich.
Yeah. I would have loved to have that vision.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what's funny about you talk about the general economy like that, and I hear people whining. The economy was $14.7 trillion in 2008. In 2009, it fell to how much?
I don't know.
$14.3 trillion, $400 billion less. From every year after that, the economy has grown. It's now a $17 trillion economy. There's plenty of deals happening. There's plenty of movement. There's all kinds of deals being made if you're going to go out there and find it. We're not in the recession anymore, and we haven't been since 2010. But this hangover, people think scarcity, there's not going to be enough. There's going to be fear. We're going to have another recession. Something's going to happen. I got to hold and keep all my powder dry. And it's keeping them from making the decision that they need to move their businesses forward.
Well, I think there's two levels of that. I mean, one for the individual is not doing much better than he was 4 or 5 years ago, because he wasn't doing that good the 4 or 5 years before that either. So there was a period back in 2007, 2006, 2007, where people they had some fantasy about the situation they were in because there was so much free credit in the world. That got tapped off in 2009. It's coming back now. The only people doing well in the economy today are basically big companies and corporations that are stacking their money away as fast as they possibly can, hiding it offshore as much as possible, reducing their tax exposures in every way possible, and the top 15 or 20% of the earning population. Everybody else is not doing very well, okay? But look, if you look at the 15 or 20%, I mean, 23% of all millionaires in the United States today are millennials, under 32 years old. Well, when were those created? Somewhere in the last 10 years, right?
Had to be not too long ago.
So what are they doing different? I don't know. I don't care how old you are, how young you are, what color you are, what language you speak. I just want to learn from you if you win it. I want to be around winners. I want to be around winning ball clubs. I want to be around winning entrepreneurs. I want to be around people that are winning and acting like they're winning, walking like they're winning. And, you know, if you want your financial condition to change, you got to get around people that are walking and talking and acting different than maybe the friends that you grew up with. I forget who said it, but somebody made this thing famous a long time ago that, you know, if you take your five best friends and figure out what they earn, you can pretty much calculate how much
Charlie
money you
Tremendous
have.
Charlie Jones.
Is that who said it?
Yeah.
It's not true. It's not true in my case. Because if I take my five friends and figure out what they're worth, I'm like, dang, I'm doing good. Because I don't judge people based on what they make, okay? It doesn't matter to me what you make. You know what? It matters to me that you're hustling, okay? Because there was a time when I wasn't making any money. First 3 years, I was an entrepreneur. I was making nothing. I was making less money as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, than I was making as a salesperson for a company.
What was that first job? What was that first business?
My first business was basically I was going out. I'd written this thing called information-assisted selling, and I was going around the country selling it. And I was going door to door, and nobody knew me, and it was brutal.
Didn't work?
I didn't know how to sell it yet. I didn't know how to pitch it. I didn't know how to talk about it. I hadn't correctly branded myself or my presentation. I gave too much information away. I mean, I got people too deep into what I was going to do for them, rather than telling them enough to get them into the program. Made a lot of mistakes.
What would you do different today with this tool that we have now? What you're doing?
Well, what I would do different today, I mean, the single biggest mistake I made in my career was not going big sooner. I should have, from the age of 29, I should have gone, when I started I should have gone huge right from the get-go. Should have spent every penny I had trying to go as big as possible right from the get-go. But I was too
scarcity.
I was scared, dude. I was scared. I thought money was security. Money is not security. Money cannot make you safe, okay? I can't spend the money I have in this lifetime. It's impossible for me. I mean, I would have to go out and every minute of every day make mistake after mistake after mistake. Money cannot make a person secure. Money cannot make you confident. Money cannot make you somehow be better than you are. You got to work it. That thing that you saw me do on the telephone, no amount of money can do that. That's not about how much money I got in the bank. That's about me having freaking courage, guts. And this is what I didn't know. I didn't know. I thought money could make you secure. You know? So what did I do? I hold on to the money. And the problem with, when you're trying to hold on to money, you can't. Your hands are full. You're operating like this, your checkbook, you know, your bank account, you're protecting it. Everything's trying to, you're trying to hold on. The way to get money, you got to have open arms and hands and an open heart, and you got to be willing to put yourself out there to get money. You have to be willing to take criticism and get attention to get money. You have to go out into the marketplace with open hands and put yourself at risk. The thing that gets security, if I'd have known this at 29, Grant, spend your last penny. Spend it all. Get yourself known in the biggest way possible. Spend the last nickel you have. Make yourself known, because people that get enough attention will always have enough money.
And now the toolkit exists like this, like what we're doing right now.
Totally.
All you got to do is have a little bit of game and show up with the camera.
Yeah. And you know what? Sometimes if you just show up with the camera, the game shows up too.
Yeah. And some chops. Never hurts to have some chops.
They'll come. It'll come. Everybody will develop. You just keep showing up on the racetrack, the legs will come. It's impossible. I've never seen somebody, if you just keep showing up over and over, I don't care how bad you are in the beginning, you will create the legs. There's a survival mechanism that I think God gave us, that if the individual just would show up in the gym, at the restaurant, for the date, whatever, dude, just show up. Merely show up and then say, okay, I'm here, now I'm going for it. If you could just do those two things, which to me are both showing up, the chops will show up. The gifts will come. The muscle will somehow, okay, I got to do something now.
That's my point about swimming. You get in the water, pretty soon you're going to be swimming.
Yeah.
You got to. It happens.
Yeah.
What are the three biggest things you tell people right now they need to do if they want to succeed, if they want to work their way out of that middle class, if they want to get some of this hustle and take care of themselves and their families?
Oh, I would tell people, you know, go to youtube.com and subscribe to my YouTube channel, Grant Cardone.
I'm going to put it in the show links the podcast.
I'd say follow my Twitter link at Grant Cardone and then get my newsletter, cardonesuccess.com. Why would I say that? Because I'm one of the only people that is telling people, look, I'm telling them the truth, okay? You can get the truth from me. You might not like what I'm telling you. I do more than teach people how to sell things, okay? I'm teaching everyone they have to sell. I'm teaching people, look, the it looks like things are better, but really are they? You know, or is this more of the hallucination? You know, you want yours, you can get yours, okay? It's not going to be fair. You do not live on a planet that is fair. You are not on a planet where the most talented person gets rewarded. You're on a planet where the only people that get rewarded are the people that are able to calculate the correct amount of effort necessary. And if you can't do that, okay, Steve Jobs, Warren Buffett, these guys, it doesn't look like they're working. Dude, the amount, the bandwidth that they operate at is so giant and enormous. These guys on Wall Street, their deals are so big, okay, that all it has to do is like a little ding, and boom, you're talking about, you know, forever money. So these guys are in pipelines that are so giant. And they know, the secret is, they know that's what it takes to get in that top. And if you don't think you need to be in the top, you need to follow me. Because that's the only group of people, including you, me, all my employees, all the people that work with me. I'm like, dude, you got to get up there. Anybody can do it. Don't have to have an education.
No one's trying to stop you. That's the odd thing. No one's going to stop you. All you got to do is show up and get in there.
Dude, the top 1%, they want some new talent in there. Let me tell you, they want new friends, new buddies, new guys to hang out with, drink with, and vacation with.
That's the thing about the 1%.
And you don't have to be pretty like me either.
Or me. That's what I like about that 1%. You know, I tell people, if you think that the 1% is your problem, that's your problem. Because if you think that 1% of your problem is anything other than you, that's your real problem. It's not that they're making it. It's that you think it's somebody else.
Yeah.
You can get in the club.
Totally, man.
What is 1%? I think the top 5% of wage earners is only something like 350 a year, right?
Yeah, I think it's 350 or something. It puts you in the top, maybe 2%.
You can get in there.
I hope not. I kill myself.
No, I hope you can get in there.
Yeah.
You're going to make it? You could hustle a little harder. How do the programs do for you? You selling those well?
What programs?
All the ones I'm looking at right there in front of me. You got the books. You got the audios. I'm giving you a chance to point people to them.
This program right here?
This is an underhand pitch. Go ahead.
I don't do underhand. I can't even do overhand, you know? Dude, all my books, I mean, all you got to do is just put my name in Twitter and see other people talking about my books. You know, that's
How about the audio?
We do better with the audio than the books.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and then we do better with the video than the books or the audio.
Anything going on I should put a link into in the podcast?
Just, Grant Cardone is a cockybastard.com.
And self-oriented.
If that's not enough, .com.
And he's hustling, though.
And he's good looking, dude. And his wife's hot, .com.
Outkickedhiscoverage.com.
Yeah. What else?
That's a hustle.
I don't know. I don't know what else to say. Shit. Go get yours, dude. Get yours. You get yours. It doesn't keep me from getting mine.
That's right.
And then come down to Miami, have dinner with me. I'll take you to 112, and we'll have a big steak.
I'm coming.
That is the irrepressible Grant Cardone, and you can find him at Grant Cardone. .com. You can also follow him at Twitter at Grant Cardone, and do go to his YouTube channel, which is user/Grant Cardone. You'll love it. I am Anthony Anarino, and you can find me at thesalesblog.com. When you get there, sign up for the newsletter. Great sales strategies, great success ideas in your inbox every Sunday morning. And until then, I'll see you next week in the arena.